Hey everyone, welcome back to the Breakpoint Show. I'm here with Martin and Khalid. It is March 26th. Wow, time flies when you're having fun. And we are having a lot of fun. This will be a really, really cool show. We're going to talk about game development, which 95% of people in the world don't do, but they wish they could, until they realize how screwed up the gaming industry really is. If you've ever read about like the horror stories of working in the industry, but it's a cool industry. We all love video games. I go all the way back to the Atari. Actually, I go all the way back to Pong. Khalid just said, if you say Pong, but I do. I had a Pong game probably in 1979, mm-hmm. around 78, 79. And then we got the Atari 800. I think it was the Atari 800 where the cartridges and stuff like that. But probably my favorite game of all time has to be Red Dead Redemption.
The first one or second one?
What? First one. The second one was cool, but the first one really, that and Skyrim. I was addicted to Skyrim. Then I was addicted to Destiny 2. Mm-hmm. And I just broke my addiction to Starfield because it's so glitchy and it just, it's glitchy on Xbox. So
it's that Bethesda jank that everybody knows about.
Yeah, it's a great game if it didn't just on like auto updates, didn't just like freeze on on updates and stuff. But what about you guys? What kind of gaming have you guys done and your favorites?
Well, probably Pong and games like that's like they were the first things that I played. I remember, I think when I was seven or something, my aunt gave me one of her original Philips video pack something, I think. It's a really old game console that had games with these big cartridges, and that was really fun to play.
That must have been Europe.
Yeah, I was just checking Wikipedia, and apparently it was sold in the US as the Magnavox Odyssey.
I remember that. Didn't know anyone that had it, but so I don't think it sold very well in the United States.
I don't think so either, but it was cool to be able to hook that up to a big TV. Now you have big and wide screens. Back then they were really deep screens because you needed those for the CRT in the monitor.
Yep.
But that was good fun. And then when LAN gaming came about, I've been playing a lot of Duke Nukem and also some of the early LAN games where you would just go with a couple of friends to a computer store where you could sit at a computer that was connected to four other computers and just have fun playing together.
That's cool. Did you guys ever play text-based gaming?
A little bit, yeah.
I can't remember DOS games. What was the one with the monster? You had to keep away from the monster. Shoot.
That's like every game, Chris. Every game you have to keep away.
Yeah.
I think Pac-Man maybe.
Oh, no. This was an actual like text-based game. Ran it on the CLI. Command line. And it would, you just type in command what you wanted to do. And so those were called Moogs. MOOG games. Something like that. So, but I'm really showing my age.
Yeah, I mean, some of the favorite games I've been playing lately, not Pong, but some of the newer games. Vampire Saviors is kind of cool. I typically like indie games, so Vampire Saviors is neat. Balatro is a really cool card game. If folks want to check that out on Steam, that's a lot of fun. It's a poker roguelike. It's kind of weird to explain it, but when you play it, it's very addictive. It's very fun.
That's cool. I'll have to look that one up.
And open world games like Spider-Man on PS5 is really good. Those are the games.
My son got that, bought a PS5 and sold his gaming PC to get a PS5 and it came bundled with the Spider-Man game. He said it was awesome. So
yeah, it's really good. So yeah.
But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, maybe it's time to start talking about game development.
Yeah.
Martin just came back from GDC. So maybe you could tell us game developer conference for folks who don't know. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about his experience there.
Well, I've been there for the entire 3 days that the conference lasted. Been at our JetBrains booth talking about the dev tools that we have there. But it's really cool to have a big variety of people show up at the booth there, ask questions, and then give them a little bit of a feel for what they are working on. I think it's really interesting to see what kind of roles you have in game development. So, for example, you have people who are just scene designers and so on. Then you have tech artists who essentially take the art and do like animations or small interactions with the world around them. Then you have people developing. People develop in Unity using a C-sharp kind of language, or actual C-sharp, but it compiles into native. There's people doing Unreal, Godot engine, and a lot of the people out there are just using custom engines that they are working on, either internally or open source engines and so on, in pretty much every language. A lot of C++ there, but even Java and Python and everything is there. It's a fun conference to see that diversity in languages that are being used to different roles that all intertwine a little bit, but also are separate in what they do.
Yeah, I remember
as a line of business developer, that is really crazy to see how similar that world is. I mean, we're all writing code and working on code bases, compiling things and so on, but also how different that world is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you have to tell a story, and business apps tell a story. They tell kind of the story of the business, that, and games have their own stories. Yeah. I remember everyone used to have to know Lua, because Lua was a big language to create mods in a lot of games.
Yeah.
I don't know if it still is, but back 20 years ago, Lua was a big language for
games. Blizzard used it in World of Warcraft for a lot of their scripting, but Balatro, the game I just mentioned, is actually completely written in Lua. It uses a game engine called Love. The O has an umlaut on it, so you can check that out. That's a really interesting game engine. But Martin was talking about like game engines. He mentioned Unreal, Unity. There's really like a wide spectrum of game engines, which I kind of find really fascinating. There are quote unquote game engines that really just give you bare primitives. They give you kind of like plugin architecture, maybe basic cameras, maybe like loading sprites, super basic. Nothing else really comes out of the package. I'd probably, if you folks remember, like the Xbox 360 era introduced the XNA game development framework. That was kind of like the introduction to a lot of game devs into game development. For the first time, they could write code in C# with the XNA game engine and actually turn their Xbox 360 into a dev kit just by turning a setting on. So now they could publish their games, and that was really a big part of the Xbox Live Arcade era. And the XNA game engine is like a very bare bones game engine, but if you look today, it's kind of evolved into Monogame. And there's a lot of games built on Monogame that are, you know, really, really successful, but a lot of the teams end up building a lot of their tooling and infrastructure on top of Monogame. Where on the other side of the spectrum, you have game engines like Unreal and Unity, which are kind of like all the batteries are almost included. And maybe Martin can talk specifically about his experience with both Unity and Unreal.
I would say it's going to be more Unity, but circling back to GDC, a lot of people are... Yeah. I would say in that Unity, Unreal spectrum and custom engines, you hear some Godot and you hear some of the other engines, but those are really the big ones. But what's cool, like you say, Unity and Unreal, they come with all the batteries included, and I actually saw a really cool Unreal demo at the Epic booth where the speaker was essentially building up an entire scene, changing a lot of the lighting, changing the physics related to the entire scene and so on. And that engine just comes with everything out of the box. It's still building blocks and making sure that it works for your scene or your game world that you're building. But it's really cool to see everything in there. But then that's on the cool. other end, Unity also comes with a lot of those primitives. It comes with physics, with animation, with pathfinding, and so on. But still, you see a lot of people build their own tooling on top of Unity, or rather inside of Unity. Because a really interesting thing with a lot of those game engines is that the game engine is built in the game engine itself, which means that in Unity, for example, your game project can just contain new menu items, new dialogues, and so on that your game developers can use to work with. And a fascinating one there is that Unity, and I guess the same thing is true for Unreal, is also sometimes used for digital animation outside of the game industry, just in movies or cartoons or things like that. And it's fun because I was talking with someone who is doing Unity for their cartoon that they are working on, and they kind of built a small tool set on top of Unity to make it easier for their animation team to create all the interactions between everyone or every character that is on the scene and so on. So
that's cool
to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you take it one step further, then you have all the design tools. Like mm-hmm. I remember when Blender went free, yeah. like Blender used to be a paid tool, and they I don't think they open sourced it. Maybe they open sourced it. But it's basically free, and people now have design plugins for it. It's at least at one point it was pretty much the standard for how do you like object design, like care, like whatever you're designing objects for your game in terms of worlds and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's a fascinating industry that always has its ups and downs, and I love keeping track of it. I don't know if I could have worked in that kind of space, but yeah, Martin, what were the big trends at GDC? I assume AI was huge, right?
Definitely AI in all kinds of directions and all kinds of opinions about it. So there was a big scream at GDC of people essentially not being happy with the way the industry works, also highlighting some of the AI, generative AI being trained on a variety of data that is out there and that people do not want AIs being trained on. On the other hand, there were, I think every other vendor who was there had AI somewhere in their offering. And there were a couple of really, really cool things done with AI, and people also seemed genuinely interested about those. So for example, we had at JetBrains, we had a demo about our AI assistants, which people loved for scripting and making their lives as a game developer faster. There was a company who are doing the generation of background sounds like winds and water and so on based on the objects that are on your scene. So essentially, if the wind would hit a leaf of grass or a leaf on a tree, what would that sound like? And it would generate that entire atmosphere, both based on algorithms, but also based on AI to fill in the blanks essentially in the scene to make sure that you get a proper sound there. So really cool techniques on where AI was being used. And then the other big trend, I think, that was going on is also in graphics. GPUs become more and more expensive. They become also very capable, but also every game developer is pushing them to the max, especially the big AA games. And you see trends like upscaling, like ray tracing, like optimizing ray tracing so that the lighting in various scenes can be done real time, but still look much nicer than the games that we're used to so far. So that was interesting. And then of course, all of the indie developers doing their games, coming up with crazy ideas about using alternative controllers and stuff like that. I wouldn't call them trends yet. I don't think one of the games that I saw was a shooter game that was using barcode scanners to shoot at barcodes on the screen. So I don't think that's going to become mainstream. But it's cool to see that people are actually thinking about different ways of doing games, both in terms of controlling them, but also in terms of game mechanics and so on.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was one Chris would like. It was called Get Off My Lawn. So you sit in a rocking chair and you rock, and then these kids run on your lawn and you have a hose and a beer. So the game tells you to drink your beer and to spray the kids off your lawn.
Oh, that's awesome. I could do that. That'd be a good grinder game, just to waste time. And I'm not like that. I like kids. I don't mind kids on my lawn. So,
yeah.
No. But kids. It is interesting. Like I do get tired of just dumb NPCs. So NPCs are not, for the people that don't know, non-player characters. So they're all the characters that the game runs inside your game. And, you know, you always get the goofy dialogue over and over again. It would be cool to have more AI type of games where, like, AI-controlled NPCs that talk to you based on the state of the game that you were in at any given point.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. NVIDIA, I think it's NVIDIA, actually just demoed that where, like, you'll talk, like, through a microphone to the game, and they'll use generative AI to essentially, like, script in real time the characters. So there is a demo of that out there. I don't know how much of it is real, how much of it is like demoware, like
paper. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah. But I do see some interesting future for gaming bait for AI. But I think some of that, have either one of you guys read Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson?
I know of it. I have not read it though.
Yeah. It's basically a story about a little girl that gets this book. It's a virtual reality book, and it teaches her, it becomes this teaching thing. And there's a whole story that goes along. I won't ruin it. And plus I don't really remember. I read it like back in the 90s. So being old, I don't remember that far back and stuff.
Your name is Chris. Just to remind you, Chris.
Yeah, I know. But Neal Stephenson is an awesome author. He wrote like Cryptonomicon, like the only book that has a page of Pearl in it that I could never figure out what it actually did. It actually worked, but so where do you think gaming is going? I mean, we have these, do you think gaming is gearing towards like PCs with these high-end GPUs, or do you think consoles are still going to be kind of big with this controlled hardware and ecosystem?
I mean, personally for me, it's kind of a really great time to get into game dev just because like there are so many options in terms of delivering your games. Like there's a company called Playdate, which sells this unique hardware, and they give you like a game dev kit to create like essentially games for this device. There's mobile development, obviously a big part of the game industry. So mobile development is an easy place to get started in terms of building games. Especially casual games are typically a little bit easier to build because there's usually the mechanics are the focus and not necessarily the physics or the assets. But if you were to look at the game industry, you could probably see that the trend is to go beyond hardware and consoles and to go more towards cloud gaming. You can see that with like what Microsoft is doing with the Xbox brand and Game Pass. PlayStation is trying to do the same thing, but it's a little bit behind in that realm. I think we're just going to get more options when it comes to gaming. And I think that's good for game dev because it means like you have more options in terms of picking game engines, picking how you want where you want those games to go and who you want playing those games. So I think it's really interesting.
Especially
as an indie developer or someone who wants to build or start building out their own game, I think you cannot get around a PC and or a Mac where you would just have your workstation that you use for developing that game, as well as running it and trying it out and so on. Probably sharing it with friends or colleagues, you would also target those platforms. So I think just because there's so many people interested in building games, I think desktop and mobile are probably gonna remain around or gonna stick around, even in combination with cloud and so on. But I also don't think every game will need that.
So with the go ahead.
Well, I was gonna add too. It's like one of the interesting facets of game dev is like when I think back of like my computer science time in college, like we had to build game engines completely from scratch. They were built using C++. There was a lot of matrix math that if you had a gun to my head today and said, make this ball roll in 3D, I'd be like, no, this is not going to happen. But like there's so many game engines with so much built into them now. And the added bonus of like hardware has become so efficient that there are even game engines for HTML5. I mentioned Vampire Saviors, one of like the biggest games last year, was built using Phaser, which is an HTML5 game engine. And it's all written in JavaScript. Like that's kind of amazing. Like you can have one of the biggest games ever on the planet and it could be written in JavaScript versus like C++. Most of the game engine physics are there for you. So it's super, super cool.
So I'll say the first time I ever did game development, which I haven't done very much, but as a kid, I had a Radio Shack, a TRS-80, which we like, it was called the Trash 80. And to make games, you basically created a pixel, just a pixel rendition of whatever you were doing, say like a spaceship. And in the, you would have another one, say like a missile that would be fired from like a tank, and it would just have edge detection. So basically you would get an event if the edge of the missile rectangle intersected with your ship. And that's how you kind of blew up. And then you show the explosion asset. It was pretty simple, but as a 11-year-old kid, it was really cool to make simple games like the arcade games that we all remember, either from experience or from just watching old movies and playing old video games like Defender and stuff like that.
So what's really cool is that the mechanic you're just describing, like doing collision detection of two objects and then making it explode using particles and so on, is really something you would almost get for free in the modern game engines like Unity and Unreal. All of the components are there. So if today you were 11 year old, you could probably still do that, but with much richer graphics.
Less code too. And yeah. So well, I mean, so what do you think the barrier, what are the tools? Are there free tools that like people and kids, like, so people that are watching this, maybe they have young kids that they want to get into like computers and programming. And you know what, gaming is really interesting because most kids play video games. So the next step is, hey, do you want to create your own video game? And so what are the tooling out there to do that? I'm curious.
I think there's probably easier engines to get started with for those scenarios, but I myself have been starting to play around with Unity for the past 3 years, not done anything useful or built any proper games, but I know my way around it. And if you were a beginner, that would probably be a good one to start with, especially if as a father or parent or mother, you want to help them out and you are doing C Sharp in your daily life, that gives you an added bonus in that the language that you develop the game in to add more interactions and so on is also C Sharp. It gets transpiled and things happen under the covers to make that work in the actual game or in the actual executable. But it's a good way to get started if you know your way around that language and if you have at least a little bit of an idea of what you may want to try to build. As an added bonus, I think just like building a WordPress website where you have tons of templates around, I also saw that Unity has a massive asset store where you can purchase graphics, but also there's a bunch of free graphics that you can use to make something small and make something also look nice at the same time.
That's cool. So how well does .NET and C Sharp fit into the gaming world? I've never really done any gaming or tried. I'm curious your take on where does .NET exist in the gaming world?
Yeah. I would say C Sharp has a pretty strong presence in game development. You know, the thing Martin and I haven't mentioned is like when we think of C Sharp, we think of it as code, but really in the game dev world, it's called a script, right? Like C Sharp files are scripts. They're not like code to be compiled. They're things you attach to components. So C Sharp, the language, is just there as a means to an end to add functionality to an existing element. That's why when we talk, like Martin and I talk to Unity people, they don't really consider themselves .NET people. They consider themselves like C Sharp and Unity people. So there's like, it's a niche side community to .NET. They use .NET, but they don't really probably think of themselves as .NET developers, the majority of them. But I would say like Monogame and XNA really kind of opened the door to C Sharp as like a game, like a language to game development. Before then, it was very heavily C++ and those kind of like memory managed languages. So C Sharp today, like Martin was saying, has a really big footprint because a lot of people share and wrote code with XNA and still continue with Monogame. So there's like a large community there. And I think C Sharp, like we can all agree, is a pretty great language. It's really easy to understand. Yep. Tooling around it is really good with things like, you know, JetBrains Writer and Visual Studio and some of the other editors out there. So I think C Sharp is pretty strong for game developers.
Yeah.
So Martin, what's the weaknesses of .NET? I mean, it's good, but there has to be some downside to it, right?
I guess it depends on the engine. I would say a pure C Sharp engine is gonna have better C Sharp support, I think, than an engine like Unity. So one of the things that first struck me when I started doing Unity was that it is indeed C Sharp. But there are quite a few pitfalls where you can shoot yourself in the foot by taking some of the constructs that you would do in a typical line of business application. So really, really interesting one is like Khalid mentioned that you attach a script to an asset or to an object that you have on your game scene. Typically, you would in Unity itself say, okay, look, this script is attached. And if that script needs some reference to something else, like for example, a different graphic or something like that, you would hook that up in Unity. What you would typically do is use Unity's event system to validate that you actually added that reference at that point. Whereas as a C# line of business developer, you would have this reflex of whenever a frame is being rendered in the update method in Unity to do a null check. But that is going to hurt your performance because of the cross-compilation to native code and everything that's going on under the hood there. And that is something that you kind of have to start looking into because there are a lot of those small pitfalls where you would either hurt performance or something wouldn't even work at all, even if C Sharp would allow you to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess for I guess for pure C-sharp engines or pure .NET based engines, you would run into typical things where all of us run into, but just faster. Things like garbage collection, having to make sure that you don't go overboard with allocations and objects and so on. And really maybe not write the most, well, you would still want to write maintainable codes, but maybe not go with repositories and all kinds of constructs that we all invented to build big ass line of business applications, but maybe just be more direct in how you work with the code that you have in the
game. Yeah. How do you think AOT kind of fits in there? Would you look at using AOT for C-sharp gaming?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. The .NET team has been doing a lot of enhancements with like native types. So AOT is definitely going to help. But I think ultimately the biggest complaints that I see around game development and game developers is garbage collection, just the way that it works. So even if you were to use native types, the memory management system of .NET is kind of a detriment.
Yeah.
That's why you see, like, right now, one of the more popular growing communities is actually happening in Rust. There's a game engine called Bevy. And with Rust's memory management, like the borrow system, there's no garbage collector there. So like you're never going just to freeze the game, drop frames because you need to collect memory back, which happens a lot in .NET. Maybe I could see a future where the .NET team realizes that game development is an important aspect of the .NET ecosystem and maybe start building a garbage collector specifically for games so that you're not running into those freezing scenarios as much. So.
Or maybe just take a look at memory management in a different way and evolve the entire CLR in maybe, who knows?
Possibly. Who knows? I mean, it's funny, Martin and I were talking about this the other day, but like we were both looking at Rust code and definitely thinking like, oh, some of these Rust ideas and concepts could definitely make their way into C# and .NET. It's a possibility, especially looking at history where the .NET team and especially the C# team can sometimes be heavily inspired by other communities. So,
which is good and bad.
Yep. Yeah, it's good. I'm going to be positive, Chris. I'm the positive one today.
Good. I know you are. So one last, we don't want this going too long because we try to keep these episodes bearable for everyone to listen to. So one last thing is, Apple came out with the Vision Pro, this VR headset, and Meta has Ocular 4. Are they up to 4? Or is it 3? I don't know. Their own headset. Where do you guys see that? Because there's always this big push that VR will be the next big kind of gaming paradigm. And it just hasn't seemed to catch on. Do you think with Apple coming in, do you think that will push it over the tipping point?
I don't know. Martin, have you ever tried VR gaming? Is it something you've tried?
I have not tried VR gaming, no.
Chris, have you played a VR game?
A little bit. My nieces and nephews have one, and I tried it. And it's really interesting, and it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that... It's immersive, so that's the really cool thing is you get this truly immersive environment.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is you can't really move around. Like, have either one of you you've seen player
Ready Player One?
Ready Player One. How that setup in the movie it was like a full suit and the VR headset, and you were on this like treadmill that could basically go in any direction, so you kind of move freely. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see if that ever comes about. I think that's one, it's probably too expensive for most people to do. And I think it would, from just a resource side, it would just be too much of an expenditure to have something that like that you have to get into as like a suit and stuff. It's great for stories and movies and books and stuff, but I don't know if real world, but the other thing is it does, for some people, it can give people a headache because the whole thing of eyes are connected to their ears, which holds kind of where people get their balance and this, and it could throw off people's equilibrium and stuff. But it's an interesting area. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah. I still think like VR gaming definitely has its place. Devices are still a little too expensive, I think, for mass adoption. Even the Meta Quest, which is like $300 to $400, still a little high. I mean, a PS5 you could basically get at $400 now. So that makes it difficult. I think VR gaming just in general, whether it's Apple, whether it's Microsoft trying with the HoloLens for AR. I know there's a big push for VR the HTC Vive was a big one. There's still a lot of vendors in the space, but I do think it's a niche market. VR itself is just a little too isolating as a gaming experience, in my opinion. And I think that's the problem, right? Like if you're sitting in a room with somebody in playing a video game on a console, they can kind of share a little bit. They can kind of sit there, watch you. They can laugh at some funny moment that happened. There are ways to project VR onto a TV, but it's still not the same kind of social experience.
Yeah.
I think it might be very, very similar in people who really like racing games, for example, and built their entire racing cockpit with controls and a custom seat and everything, where you will have people who really like VR gaming, but just like in that cockpit's modes, it is something that is only where you are playing, and some people can indeed watch the screen, but they will not get the same experience as you have.
Yeah. Have you seen some of those setups?
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of the really expensive ones, like the NASCAR racers will do. I just watched Gran Turismo, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually pretty cool. Like the hardware and the setup and I took a look just to see how much some of those kits cost. And I was amazed that you could get something for like $100 all the way up to like tens of thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. For all the stuff.
They actually have professional racing leagues, like virtual racing leagues. So I think NASCAR actually runs their own virtual league. So it's kind of pretty neat. So
yeah, it is. It is. Well, we're starting to wind down. So each, I wonder what you're kind of, with all this chatter about game development, and how does this fit into the normal developer toolkit? How can someone like me or you or like a business developer, what type of things can we kind of take from the gaming developer experience and bring into our world?
I think from the dabbling that I've done, it is the simplicity in a way. I mean, games are still complex and game logic and everything is still complex, but the straight way that things are being done, like there's no intermediate layers or not too many of them. And I think as line of business developers, we very often forget about that. And I will say, doing a little bit of game development is actually quite liberating in that aspect. You can just write code and it works. You don't have to really think about architecture too much. Yes, there are best practices in how you would set up a scene, for example. But even if you don't really want to care about that yet, you can just create one script and do everything in one script. Again, not best practice, but it's liberating.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'll echo what Martin says, which is like, the thing I find really fascinating about game dev is like, while there's like a lot of technicality and skill and craftsmanship that goes into games, it's like, I really appreciate that the focus of game dev is about building the final product, about building a game. So one of like the best-selling games in the last decade was an indie game called Undertale. And that game's code is apparently one big switch or if else statement, right? So it's like, no matter how quote unquote good or bad your code is, it's like the real focus is the final product. And I think from a .NET line of business developer perspective, sometimes we fetishize kind of patterns and practices, and that kind of stuff loses focus on what we're ultimately trying to do, which is deliver a good experience for our end users. And I think if you were to get into game dev, it'll help you refocus that perspective and say, no, it's the final thing that matters, not all this extra stuff that I'm doing over here. Simplicity. It's important, but it's not the focus, right?
Yeah. You're building a simplistic system for a complex experience.
Well, you're building it for somebody else. Like, there's always keep in mind the human on the other side of it. It's not about you. It's not about what you want. It's about delivering something to somebody else. Exactly. And I think that's pretty cool.
Awesome. That's a great end point. I love that. Yeah. And I think that's what every developer should remember.
Mm-hmm.
I think we get so involved in stuff. Like, I was I was listening to a podcast yesterday with Vinkit, and I cannot remember Vinkit's last name, but he's a huge person in the Java and the JavaScript area. And he was talking about architecture, and he was talking about like, developers are losing touch. You don't have an architecture and then bring in a business need for that architecture. It's supposed to be, you have a business need and you develop your architecture based on your business need. And and so many of us go, oh, microservices. Yeah, I want to use microservices and so I like that thing that you said, Khalid, that you have to kind of build for the end person. And so that kind of is good for all of us to remember, because I think sometimes we forget, we get the hammer and we think everything is a nail to get pounded. So awesome. Well, any other parting thoughts?
No,
Martin, we're glad you got back from the United States okay, and you're back in safe Belgium. You didn't get too much American influence, probably a little bit. Did you bring back some bourbon?
I have a bald eagle in my backyard now.
Oh, okay, good. Did you bring back any bourbon? Did you go to any liquor stores and get any bourbon to bring back?
I sampled some, but I did not bring any back.
Okay, well, I promise next time I see you, you will get a bottle of bourbon. So with that, I was rambling, sorry. But with that, we're going to end, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. And again, if you like what we're doing on YouTube, go down, like, subscribe. if you really like what we're doing, go out to our website, let us know what you want us to talk about, because we want to talk about things that you want us to talk about, or to bring up these concepts and these new ideas and stuff. So, or if you want someone to be on our show, every once in a while, we'll probably do a guest or guests to come on the show and talk about what they're passionate about. So just ping us. And that's about it. Do you guys want to say goodbye?
Yeah. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.